foot enthusiasts, minimal footwear lovers, or anyone trying to fix your own feet, I'm heading to North Carolina this May to lead a live, in-person, three-day retreat all about feet. I'm going to be at the Art of Living Retreat Center, which is up in the mountains of North Carolina. It's so beautiful there. And are you ready to hear what I'm calling it? The retreat is called Healing Your Soul, a stepwise approach to building forever functional feet. That's so good, right? If you want to learn all about how to take care of the muscles, bones, joints, fascia, and nerves of the feet, and learn how strong feet and ankles relate to sustainable hips and knees, this event is for you. In addition to the classroom and movement time with me, you're on retreat. So there's delicious meals, a nature-rich campus that you can explore on foot, and plenty of time for rest and relaxation, all included. A retreat is a perfect way to care for yourself in the moment, but also in the future. You are coming to learn a massive toolkit of information. So whether you're a competitive runner, a dynamic ager, or a healthcare practitioner, this is a weekend full of movement for you and your feet. And like I said, you're gonna leave with a toolkit and a big swag bag that you can use to train your feet for life. For more information about the movement sessions, the food, the center, head to my website, nutritiousmovement.com/retreat. That's nutritiousmovement.com/retreat. This is Katie B, and you are about to listen to an early episode of my podcast. Now the show is called the Move Your DNA Podcast, and you can find all episode transcripts and the show notes to this episode at nutritiousmovement.com/podcast. Enjoy.
You're listening to Katie Says, the podcast that helps you become aligned and well. Join us for conversations with Katie Bowman, biomechanist, creator, and director of the Restorative Exercise Institute, author, teacher, blogger, mother, and total body nerd. Understand the mechanical causes of modern ailments, learn how to fix them, and restore yourself to a more functional state of natural human movement. We hope you find the general information on biomechanics, movement, and alignment informative and helpful, but it is not intended to replace medical advice and shouldn't be used as such. And now, your host, Danny Hammett.
Hi there. Thank you for joining us. My name is Danny Hammett, and I get to talk with Katie Bowman each and every show as she answers questions about alignment, health, biomechanics, and all the bits and pieces in between. Hey, Katie. How are you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing well. I wanted to ask you, I know you like to eat. You like food.
Yeah? Yes, I do.
Food is good. Do you garden? Do you grow anything?
We do. We have just moved into the house that I'm living in. We moved in after the end of last summer. But in our last place, mostly greens. Sorry for yawning.
That's okay.
Kale and spinach and onions and herbs. I don't do too much more than that because we travel. That it's often for naught because we can't tend to the garden, especially like we'll be gone 6 weeks this summer.
Wow.
So that doesn't really make for great gardening. But we have fruit trees. So I have cherry trees and four different kinds of plums. I have Italian plums and prune plums and apple trees. And so I definitely produce some good food calories, but the rest we just get from, we trade a lot. Like, hey, we'll take all your kids out for a 4-hour hike and you can just give us some Swiss chard and it works out pretty well.
Well, that's a win-win. That's
win-win for win-win yeah. For everybody.
So is this your first year with the fruit trees here?
Yeah. At the end of last year, we'd had, we didn't have cherries because we came in too late, but we had a lot of plums and a lot of apples.
Okay. So you know about how much crows love fruit?
Yeah.
Excellent.
And deer.
Okay. Because we used to have a cherry tree that for 5 years, we just watched the cherries come and go overnight until we finally got wise to it. So,
What did you have to do? Like, how do you keep crows off a cherry tree?
Netting, like double layer netting, which is problematic as the tree grows larger. because you have to get on a ladder with a stick and a bunch of people are involved. And it's kind of like Moby Dick, you know, you're trying to throw a net over this huge thing, this whale of a tree. So, but it's got to be done. If you have crows and birds, it's got to be done.
It's so interesting because we have four and my sister has them. She never mentions the crows, but she has her one kid who is like a crow. She would just find him up at 6 a.m. eating all of the cherries off the ladder. Like he would just mow through them. The kid runs completely on produce. He has no affinity for processed food. He only wants to eat raw food that he's foraged himself. So he is the equivalent, I guess, of the crow.
Yes. Speaking of kids, when you were a kid, did you ever break any bones?
Broke a ceramic table once, but no. Yeah. I've never broke a bone. And there's, 10 kids in my family, and there's only one broken bone.
Wow.
I know. And that was my older sister. I wasn't even born at the time. I'm number 9 out of 10. My sister, Janet, is profoundly deaf, and I have six brothers, and evidently the story goes that they were trying to get her into the tree where they were playing, and so they thought they would haul her up in a shopping cart, and then like halfway up, they dumped the shopping cart out, and she fell and broke her arm. But then they told her not to tell what had actually happened, so I don't think it was until like a few years ago that they came clean to my dad that she didn't fall off a bike, that they had dumped her out of a tree.
There's a lot of coming clean later in your house, because I know about that table story. You wrote about it in your book. So.
Yes, yeah. Yes. Coming clean seems to be a rite of passage.
I agree.
Just wait till your kids come clean.
Yeah, I don't want to hear.
Right.
I don't want to know.
La, la, la,
yeah.
La, la.
I'm going to look the other way. Well, I always wanted to break something because I was so jealous of the casts that kids got to wear. They got that attention. They got out of carrying their books to classes. People drew smiley faces and hearts. And once I even tried to break something so that I could get a cast, because apparently I desperately needed attention.
What did you break?
No,
or what did you try to break?
I tried to break my thumb because it seemed like the least painful thing to do. And I didn't want to just jump out of a tree or anything like that. So I actually just kind of really pressed hard on my thumb, and that didn't work. So I kind of took a hammer to it, and I just ended up with a sprained thumb, a big hospital bill, and some very angry parents. But I never came clean. I guess I just did now. So, Mom, if you're listening, I'm sorry about that. I just wanted the cast.
Wow. I have a whole different impression of you now than sitting in some garage trying to break your own thumb with a hammer. That takes, like, that's some serious gumption. That's
I am a determined individual.
Wow.
Yeah. And I was not rewarded with anything. Nothing. No. Just the lesson. The lesson, and maybe a little bit smarter after that.
Oh my goodness. All right.
There's all sorts of casts, though. Not just the casts that people draw hearts and smiley faces on, right?
Correct.
Casts are meant to keep things from moving so that they can heal. But the kind of casts that we're going to talk about today are things that we do that prevent some or all of our body from moving. Got any theories on casts and why and what they are?
Well, I write a lot about being casted, right? So cast could imply the thing that you put on your arm, but it's also like if people are artists and they mold things, right? Anytime you want something to retain its shape, you put a cast on it. That's what to cast means, is to set it in a particular shape. I use the concept of casts in trying to explain particular physical outcomes, because immobilizing parts, no matter how that immobilization goes down, the result is always a version of what happens when you're in a physical cast, like in a break your arm, hearts type of cast, which is you're setting a joint range of motion to which the musculature adapts. And it adapts by atrophying being both the reduction in thickness of a muscle, right? So a muscle getting skinnier. Okay. But also in cases of muscles having to adjust its length to accommodate the new joint position. So either becoming shorter or longer as the joint position dictates by actually adding or taking away mass, which then affects the future range of motion of that body part. So people who've ever been injured and who's been in a cast have had that cast come off and know that there's been some sort of restoration process to get their muscles back. And it takes a lot longer to get a muscle back than it does for it to go away in that cast. And that's because you're casted 100% of the time for the most part. But when you go to fix the muscle that was casted, the time that you're working on fixing it is a lot less. So it doesn't take longer per se. It's just that you're working on it a lot less frequently once you're out of the cast, where you were working on shortening it all of the time when you were in the cast, if that makes sense.
It does. If I don't have a cast with hearts on it, what do you consider ways that we kind of inadvertently possibly cast our bodies?
Well, if you have a positive heeled shoe, then and you wear one a lot or often, and casting in a non-traditional cast scenario has to do with the frequency in which you've altered joint position. So shoes, I like to start, like, the ankle and the foot are extremely casted tissue. So your foot has set physical parameters or limitations that the muscles and the tissues then adjust to. So it could be the lack of being able to spread, right? It could also be spread your toes.
Okay.
It could also be the inability for your heel to come back down to the ground. So, you know, a lot of people who are like, I've been wearing heels for so long, I can no longer not wear them. If you've ever heard people say that, what the phenomenon that they're experiencing is they've altered their geometry at the ankle so much that they've physically lost the structure necessary to stop pointing their toes, which is the joint range of motion in a heeled shoe. So,
yeah, so, or when they say that, I've had people say to me, the flat shoe, that's just uncomfortable. I don't know why you think those are comfortable, but they've spent their whole life, you know, in a high heel.
Sure. So it's uncomfortable.
Yeah,
it's uncomfortable.
It is uncomfortable.
It is. Like, they're absolutely telling the truth, and they're really physiologically not, they don't have the equipment to not wear a heel, mm-hmm. heeled shoe. Like, there's this whole therapeutic process that needs to happen. And again, it takes a really long time. Then there's I think what I'm most fascinated by is the flat ground cast. So your ankle is extremely complex. There's three joints that can deform as you walk over stones. And if you imagine going out hiking, if you look at the surfaces that you'll be walking over, there's no two surfaces alike. The pitch and the angle at which your ankle needs to deform are different every single place that you step in. And so had you always been using that full range of motion, you would have maintained the tissue necessary to do so. But the flat ground itself is a cast in that it prevents you from doing any of those other things with your ankle while you're walking. So we have to kind of broaden the notion of a cast as anything that prevents motion. And the flat ground is one of those things. And since we've been walking on flat level ground almost every single step, almost our entire life, your structures, when you look at them anatomically, when we look at the structure of the ankle joint anatomically in research, we have to remind ourselves that what we're looking at is a population that has been casted. Not, you're looking at a joint and tissue structure formed by a cast that we've inadvertently placed upon our foot just by how we've set up our physical environment.
If somebody goes out and they walk every day, and they're on a sidewalk, you know, a city sidewalk, they're doing this good thing, they're walking, and it's kind of, it's really something to digest, thinking about, well, yeah, I'm walking, but I'm not getting that full range of motion that my ankle can do.
Yeah, not just the ankle, it's your ankle, knees, and your hips.
Yeah.
And it's your pelvis, which means it's also your lower back. So it's a whole body cast. It's just a lot easier to understand if we only talk about the ankle. But yes, like, you are how you move, and you have to, as I, have talked about before with the notion of natural movement versus like an unnatural movement scenario, you have to keep referring back to the biggest picture, which is we have a cage metaphorical cage that's setting parameters about what parts of us get to move or not. And we always need to remember that that's what we're looking at when we look at modern humans. We're not looking at human structure as much as caged human structure, casted human structure.
Casted human structure. Okay, so aside from level ground or flat ground, like sidewalks and cement and stuff and shoes, what other kind of casting can we do?
We've been casted by chairs. I mean, chairs, the seats that, you know, we talk about sitting being a problem, but it's not the stillness necessarily. The stillness is a separate problem from the fact that the stillness is always happening in the same geometrical formation that then cause structural adaptations to that geometrical formation. So the hip flexion and the knee flexion and the pelvic tilting, which is then the articulation of the lumbar spine, all of those become casted. And when we get up and out of our chair, those adaptations don't just go away if we're up and about for, you know, an hour versus the rest of the time that we're not and in this casted position, because you just slowly adapt to what you do most frequently. And what you do most frequently is sit in a chair. So the chair is another one. And you have to remember that we've been in chairs since we were four or five for most of us, which means that during the period of time in which you did most of your growing, you did most of your sitting. And probably more so for this generation than our generation, your and I generation, where we broke up a lot of sitting with more vigorous motion. Now with the age of technology, I put this in Move Your DNA because I found the statistic like mind blowing. So in a Canadians are really good at like their public health monitoring. And so the data shows that like the average Canadian teenager walks 11 minutes a day.
Wow.
11 wow. minutes.
That is mind blowing.
It is.
Kind of disturbing along with the mind blowing.
Just, I mean, quantifying stuff makes it all so much more clear.
Right.
For sure. I like to convert the, like moving around for an hour is still only 4% of your day. So what are you doing? You know, the other, I'll say 96%, but you have to cut off the sleeping, sleep time. But what are you doing the rest of your waking hours? It's not moving.
Right.
So you have to look at if you're still during that period of time, can you get out of the cask? You can still be still and get your work done, but can you sit or stand differently? Because then that will decrease the effect of the cast that you most frequent, which is probably your chair in front of your computer. And
well, and even standing, like I have a standing workstation in front of my computer that I use 99% of the time, but even standing, I find I can't just stand there. You know, I have to shift. I have to hold one leg up behind me or rest one leg. You know, I kind of shift my weight back and forth because any sort of static situation I start to get aggravated in. Like I can't, I watched Godzilla last night in the movie theater and my daughter kept saying, do you have to go to the bathroom? Do you have to go to the bathroom? Because I just can't stay in one position for very long. I get very aggravated.
Yeah, it's kind of like once you take your shoes off, you realize when you put once you take positive heeled shoes off, once you discontinue wearing those and then you put on like a heeled shoe for some rare occasion, it feels like a giant wedge, you know, it's like up your butt, you know, like like your up your low back's all jacked up. Once you become a more habitual mover, you become aware of all the sensations that come with being still, which before, because they were most frequent, were kind of – they are taken out of your – of a part of your brain that's monitoring. Like anything that's the same repetitively, your mind stops bringing it to your attention because it's like, well, we already signaled this many times. Nothing was changed, so we're going to stop utilizing energy because there's obviously some reason for you to be in this position. So only when you stop the habit do you become aware of all that you were sensing before that your mind conveniently removed for you to be to have to deliberate on. It's kind of like when you give up sugar, then you realize how sweet everything tastes afterwards.
Yeah.
You know, it's the same, like it tastes exactly the same before, but what's different is the way that you process it. You process unique and novel things differently than you process repetitive inputs.
It's true. I'm actually in week two of giving up sugar, and I had some ketchup the other night, and it felt like pouring Hershey's syrup down my throat. I was like, whoa, there's so much sugar in ketchup.
You don't even realize it before.
No, not at all. In fact,
everything is sweet. Everything
it's quite savory sweet. When you have sugar in your diet and you have something like that, it's a savory sensation. And then when you remove it, you pick out all the sweet.
Just a heap of brown sugar here on my burger.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so we've got chairs, shoes, flat, level ground. What other kind of things do you think cast us?
Well, I think the muscles in people's eyes are extremely casted by the distance that they maintain from their computer screen. So just like your muscles have a full range of motion, like in your arms and your legs, so do the muscles in your eyes. Looking far away versus looking really close up is created by the degree to which the ciliary muscles in your eyes are contracting or relaxing, right? So we don't cross train our eyes very well, right? We don't spend equivalent time looking over the range of distances, which would be like using our eyes in a constantly varied way. Instead, everything that we look at is either, I don't know how far your computer screen is. Like, okay, I'm putting my arms down. So whatever the distance is between your typing position, so like 2 feet. So either your eyes are looking at something 2 feet, or maybe at the greatest distance you look across your house and it's like 20 feet or 30 feet, depending on your house. And that's the extent that you work those muscles. Like, that's the narrow range of motion. And so your eyes adapt to that, and then they lose the ability to see far away, really far away, which requires a certain relaxation. So in the same way that it's challenging to get your psoas to relax or your calf muscles to relax to accommodate non-heeled shoes, it becomes difficult to relax your eyes to see real, real far away because you just don't practice that range of motion. So I've been really conscientious of that one, especially spending so much time writing. I've never sat, even when I was in graduate school doing a thesis, I never wrote as much as I have in the last 4 or 5 months. And I could just feel the tension in like the rest of my face. It's like my eyes go, and then everything else tenses around it. And just taking myself out in a way to look as far away as I can really helps soften and helps me hit these other ranges of motion. It's like taking the cast off. It's removing the parameters that having nothing far away to look at sets for your eye muscles.
Yeah. I guess that's since you started talking about that, I started looking wildly around the room, just trying to to not look at my computer screen. There's also, do you know that program Timeout that you can get? It's a free app on a computer, and you can actually set it so it just kind of stops your computer for a second so that you're forced to kind of look around and take a break from that. And because otherwise I will just stare and stare and stare. But reading, what do you do? Because you and I both read a lot, you can only have it a certain distance from your eyes. So do you just practice stopping and looking around? Because reading can be very engrossing, as can writing.
Yeah,
how do you take those breaks for yourself?
Well,
what signals you?
I've had to go a step farther, which is to stop reading so much and switching to things like audiobooks, because while the content of books is amazing for part of me, it's debilitating to other parts of me. And so in recognizing my more habitual sedentary patterns, reading being one of those, I had to find a way to satisfy my enjoyment of consuming ideas while consuming other aspects of nature. So I've reduced my reading time by switching over to audiobooks, which I love and which I've had a whole new appreciation for, because I can relax my eyes. Even if I just want to stay sedentary, stay in bed at the end of the day, I don't have to utilize my eyes. So it does create a different physiological response to that book as mm-hmm. it was before. But that's the kind of breaks. And also to set a minimum in the same way, you know, you set minimums for television time for your kids. You just set limits to reading because it's hard to say what is good or what is not good. It all depends on your perspective.
Yeah.
And there's got to be a point if you're having physical distress because of the total quantity that you're inert, or when you're reading, it's not just that you're inert and you're busy contracting your eyes, that you find a balance. So just finding a bigger balance. I mean, if you want to
always
look
a challenge.
Away, always a challenge.
Balance is always a challenge. Well, and let's talk about Spanx, baby. What do you think about that kind of stuff that compresses your body, like a bra? And there's all different kinds of underwear, right? There's just your regular basic loosey-goosey stuff, especially if you're like me and you haven't gone and bought underwear in a long time. Or there's really tight, like compression stuff, stuff that holds us in, bras that hold us up, like with a wire or something like that. Is that something that can affect? Because as far as movement, I mean, my boobs are going to be there whether or not they're being held up, right? Or does that affect them?
Oh, I would say that affects them. I would say that underwear is it's a little bit more of a complex argument. So I'll let people read about it in the book, because there's a whole section on underwear, men and women, and then going beyond just underwear to belts and Spanx, compressive garments, and it all is geometry altering. It all is load altering. Your boobs are going to be there, as you mentioned, or if someone wears, you know, tighty whities, your balls are going to be there regardless. But that does not mean that it's the same mechanical environment with and without those, you know, casts. Casting meaning it's preventing the full range of motion of your hanging and swinging bits. So there are potential consequences for that. And then, of course, I'll refer you to the book from that part, but I'll end by saying that, yes. And there's actually, I posted, I think, on our Facebook page, some of the more recent literature about those types of, like, compressive garments, and including a belt. Like, people don't think of a belt as a compressive garment, but it's like applying a pressure all of the time to your trunk and the digestive issues and the pelvic issues that come from playing with those pressures.
Oh, and that's why you'll only find me in elastic waist pants.
There you go.
I said it. I've constructed both my careers around being able to just wear yoga pants all the time.
Yeah, I don't even have any I don't have any movement-restricted clothing anymore, because it's not worth it. It's just like we were talking about how you feel the stillness, or you feel the heel under your shoe. I can feel the limitations of clothing that doesn't move with my body. It's like being in a straight jacket. So just over the last 10 years, I don't have anything left. I have one pair of jeans, and they are totally like baggy and stretchy, and they're like my camping jeans. But other than that, everything is Lycra, baby.
Yep, I'm with
you. It's not really Lycra. It's just all flexible.
Flexible, elastic and flexible. Yeah, I also have one pair of jeans. So, and they're loose and baggy, and that's just the way I like them.
Yep.
So, well, what about in a bigger scale, maybe just is being inside is being inside a cast? Is, we know sitting in our chair is, we know sitting and watching TV on the couch can cast our bodies, but what about just kind of living from car to house to office to store to car to house?
Yeah, I mean, I'll break down being inside into two different categories. Being inside of a structure, I mean, it's casting the limit. It's setting the limitations of your physical responses to things like temperature, and wind, and other sensory inputs that have mechanical responses. So, you know, people lose the ability to deal with hot and cold, which are physical responses of shunting blood, right, and dissipating heat as needed, or using your, like, horripilation, which is a fancy word for goosebumps, to move hairs, to trap air, to warm it so that you get a pocket of warmth around the body. Like, all of these are movements. They're small movements, but all of those are metabolism, expending functions. All of those have musculature that adapts to its being used or not. So in that way, being inside of a structure is affecting, you know, the forces that you create with your muscles. And then there's, I guess we could probably end the show with talking about being inside of a culture, like the being the cast, like feeling that our decisions, that the spectrum of decisions that are available to us are casted, so to speak, by what's accepted socially. If you know what I mean.
I do know what you mean. Sometimes I just have to really think about it because it makes me shift my my way of thinking about it. So I just have to digest the what you just said. And that was good.
Casted.
Casted. So many different ways to be casted.
Mm-hmm.
Well, how are you going to get outside today?
I'm going to use my two legs to walk outside. And we're going to do some hiking later on. And then I've been doing a lot of swimming lately. Swimming is, I think I mentioned before, maybe on a different show, that I love swimming like depth diving and really moving in a non like repetitive, like not going and swimming stroke back
and
forth in the
lap.
No, just like free diving and kind of pretending that I'm a seal. I pretend I'm a seal now. It's something I've done my whole entire life, but before I pretended I was a mermaid. Including like binding my ankles together with a ring and then pretending that I was a mermaid for hours in the pool. So I've kind of started doing that again. Our kids are in swim lessons and we've got some great lakes that we're headed to for some travels for work this summer. So that's how I will be getting my movement and also to the post office. I try to walk to the post office for work every day to blend movement into my actual work production. So that's what I'll be doing. How about you?
That sounds good. I am going to plant some seedlings out in my garden. I've been growing them inside and I was going to plant them. And right before I grabbed them to plant them, my neighbor said, "Did you hear about the hailstorm that's coming our way?" And sure enough, golf ball sized hail hit a half hour later, broke windows in our house.
What?
Yeah, I'm not kidding you. It was huge. It was like nothing you've ever. It was like we were under a military assault in our old, you know, 1900s house. And I was so happy that he said that because all these tender cucumber and pea shoots that I've been growing and tending, they would be dead. They would just be dead. So now
pummeled to death.
Yep. So now is the day that they get to see the sunshine for reals.
And so do you.
Yes. Well, thank you so much. I hope you have an awesome time swimming today. And I will talk to you later.
All right, Danny, have fun in the garden.
Thanks. Right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening. For more information, visit Katie Bowman's edutaining blog, katiesays.com. For books, online classes, downloads, and continuing educational courses with Katie, visit the Restorative Exercise Institute at restorativeexercise.com. Her most anticipated book, Move Your DNA, will be available in September 2014. You can learn more about Danny Hemmett at moveyourbodybetter.com and dannyhemmett.com.